I'm Alan Hardy.
Hi, this is Matty Cash.
Hi, I'm Darren Fletcher.
Hi, I'm Stuart Pearce, and you're listening to URN Sport.
Welcome to the home of the oldest professional football club in the country.
The expectation of the fans now is to be talking about promotion.
As a team, as a squad of players, we've come a long way.
Goals from Jason Cummings and from Kieran Dowell in that match.
The City fans got that special buzz about it.
Obviously, it's such a big club and the fan base is massive.
This is URN Sport.
Hello and welcome to Over the Trent here on University Radio Nottingham, your podcast covering Notts County and Nottingham Forest. I'm joined on today's episode by Jeremy Dunn and Jimmy Morehouse. Now we're going to be getting our teeth right into the playoff campaign for Notts County. A 1-1 draw last night away at the Ricoh Arena against Coventry City for the Magpies. A late penalty decision, of course, being the big talking point from that match. We're going to be providing you with all the analysis from that game. We also spoke to John Stead and the gaffer Kevin Nolan on Thursday at the press conference prior to the opening playoff match.
You know, getting to the ripe age of 35 and not being involved in playoffs, it's a new thing for me. It'll be exciting.
And we'll also be covering all things Forest and getting our... We'll also be providing our thoughts on Forest and looking ahead to what could be a busy transfer window over the summer for them. Now, first off, we're going to play you a preview package prior to yesterday's 1-1 draw against Coventry City. Notts County took over 2,500 fans down to the West Midlands. Here's a little taster prior to the game.
Hi, I'm Darren Fletcher, and you're listening to URN Sport.
Over 2,500 Notts County supporters will be travelling to the West Midlands to witness Kevin Nolan and the team embark on their playoff promotion push in League 2 when they face Coventry City away this Saturday. It's been a resurgent season for the Magpies, who finished the season perched in 5th position in Skybet League 2, just 7 points off the automatic promotion spots. They were on top spot for the majority of the first half of the season as well, which represents a dramatic improvement from where the side were last year. The manager Nolan, who has previous experience of winning playoff finals with West Ham and Bolton Wanderers as a player, says the consistent support is key to any intentions on getting up into League One.
We need another 1,500 to be sold so that we can match them, because we know that they'll bring 4 when they come here next Friday. So for me, it's about trying to get them other 1,500 sold and getting behind the lads. And, you know, because, as I said, it might be another 10, 20 years before we're back in the playoffs.
The former Leyton Orient boss, who took over in the dugout a year and a half ago at Meadow Lane, added that his side need to be able to handle the pressure which comes with being playoff contenders.
You know that every one of those players are going through something different this week, because there'll be more phone calls, there'll be more text messages, more WhatsApp messages, more Twitter. You know, there'll be more and more of everything what they're used to.
Striker John Stead has mustered 13 goals for the Magpies this season. The veteran forward has played for almost 20 clubs in his long career, but this is the first playoff campaign he'll have been involved in.
A long career, you know, getting to the ripe age of 35 and not being involved in playoffs. It's a new thing for me. It'll be exciting. A lot of tension, everything that you want in a football match, really. So I've got 2 cup finals coming up, and then hopefully we make it to Wembley.
Like his manager, Stead, who signed a 1-year contract extension at Meadow Lane last month, has given a warning of calm ahead of the 2 games against Coventry.
Well, I think it's keeping calm. I think that's been kind of the message from a lot of people. That obviously, when it's like a big derby game or a cup game, you know, the tensions are going to be high, and I think it's about floating above that, really, and keeping calm heads and making the right decisions.
With a playoff final place at stake, the world's oldest football club could be on course for their long-awaited return to English football's third tier.
I'm Les Brad, and I'm Notts County's all-time highest goals scorer, and you're listening to Over the Trent.
So, guys, ultimately disappointment at the end of the game, albeit with a 1-1 draw away from home. Probably would have taken that at the start, but it's just the kind of the way that it happened, isn't it, Jimmy, with that late penalties decision?
Yeah, certainly. I think Notts County, as you say, they played very well in that second half. They took a good lead through 14, a really nice finish it was as well. And they looked more likely to get the second goal. They had Coventry, you know, it was in control for Notts County at that point. And really, it was just, I mean, you say that Notts County fans feel aggrieved, I feel aggrieved for them as well from that, because it was just a baffling decision. It just looked like a normal tackle anywhere else on the pitch and it would have been fine, but the referee has just decided to give a penalty, and That's really unfortunate, but as you say, you know, a draw away at Coventry is certainly not a bad result, and they can go into next Friday's game full of hope to reach the final.
Jeremy, it's just baffling, isn't it? Because Tootle clearly got the ball. I mean, that seemed to be what everybody saw, but it was the fact that the Coventry player just went down with the slightest brush of his foot.
In all honesty, that there was no way on earth that is a penalty. He gets the ball very clearly, and it's a glancing contact with the Coventry player who makes an absolute meal out of it. And in all fairness, he was basically right on the edge of the box. There's, you know, it's very dubious as to was he even in the box when he goes down claiming that it is a tackle. I think he does make the tackle, to be fair, within it. But it's, you know, the whole thing is very, not suspect or anything like that, but it's sort of, you know, it's really just sort of, I could say bad luck, but it's, you know, thoroughly undeserved because, you know, County did play very well in that match, especially. I mean, like we said, you know, Forte's finish was pretty impressive, to be fair. You know, cheeky little back heels, the ball comes in, driven low into the box, and very nicely tucked away by him. So it was a great one for them to take the lead. But, you know, looking at it as well, and the stats-wise, County had, you know, less shots, less possession, but they had far more shots on target. They had 4 shots to 1 for Coventry. Obviously, Coventry's 1 shot on target was the penalty which McNulty took. And in all fairness to him, it was a very well-taken penalty, very cleanly struck right into the bottom right-hand corner of the goal. But County can definitely walk away feeling confident of it. I think the home leg now, you know, the fact that they're saying, well, we're only level with Coventry because of a dubious penalty decision when we were the better team, really, despite what the stats might say. They were much more positive in the match than Coventry. Coventry were sat back, I think it's safe to say, for quite a bit of it. They seemed to sort of be almost a bit cautious because, to be fair, you know, this is a team that in County that have for a good portion of the season been league leaders, and I think that you can see that rubbing off against Coventry. They were certainly concerned and aware of that.
Yeah, shame at the end of the game then with that penalty, but so much to be positive and encouraged about by that Notts County performance. It was interesting how the game went. I thought that Notts County were slightly rattled. Coventry came out the blocks very, very quickly in that game, especially when one of the players, I think it might have been Nick McNulty, their striker, hit the post very, very early on. Adam Collin, a little bit of a shaky start from him as well. But to their credit, they kept at their game plan. And I think Jonathan Fort, I know Dan Jones got man of the match, but Jonathan Fort led the line very well, and his touch on the ball, bringing that ball down, was just superb.
Yeah, one of the talking points beforehand, I remember, just sort of when the team sheet was announced, was the fact that Shola Amiobi was on the bench for it rather than starting. Now, obviously, you know, Shola and John said they aren't exactly spring chicks anymore when we look at it, to be fair. But, you know, Amiobi does have the experience. He is someone that you would probably rely on, I think, in some of these matches. Certainly, he has been a very important member of County this year, both on and off the pitch. But, you know, like you said, Joe Fort did extremely well with the chances he was given. He seemed like a, you know, good man to be leading the squad in Kevin Nolan's preferred 4-4-2, which he's stuck with pretty much all season, it has to be said, which is, you know, it's good that he has kept that air of consistency. But it was also a generally strong lineup that County went with as well last night. But yeah, like we just keep coming back to, that penalty decision just really has to kind of deflate the mood a little bit.
Yeah, and Jimmy, 4-4-2 set up all season, as Jeremy's just mentioned there. Do you think he could have possibly set up any differently with the fact that he was playing Coventry and probably mindful of the fact that they were going to come out of the blocks really quickly? And also just looking at the bench, you had the likes of Shola on there, you had Lewis Alessandro, who actually played really well in the last game of the season against Luton when he came off the bench. And I thought Matty Virtue right on the right wing had a bit of a lukewarm performance. Would you have set up any differently, do you think?
I think if I was Kevin Nolan, then I'd just stick with what they know. You know, you don't want to be making any too radical changes for the playoffs. You got to stick with what has worked for them throughout the season. And I think the combination of Fort and Stead proved dangerous because Coventry are a physical side. And I think if he had played Amiobi instead, for example, then there wouldn't have really been anyone to pick up on those knockdowns. And really playing a quick striker like Fort proved like a good decision because he's got a lot of pace for it, and the two Coventry centre-backs don't really have much pace. So you could tell that he was causing them some problems there. And I think, yeah, 4-4-2 was the right decision for me, and it very nearly paid off with a win.
What kind of things, Jeremy, as well, have you seen in Coventry during that performance? I mean, slightly different in terms of their game plan. I don't think they adopt quite such a long ball strategy and hit the diagonals quite so much as the Magpies do. But nonetheless, they did play well in certain aspects of the game. And McNulty, as I said, you know, tucked that penalty away really, really well. And, you know, he was probably their shining light.
Yeah, I think their pressing game was very good, actually, to be fair. That's certainly what I think the points we picked up from the first half. They were very quick, like you said, Joe, off the blocks. And I think the fact they were turning over the ball very fast when County did win it back, and winning it back, you know, chasing them down, hunting them down in packs and winning it back, was certainly an element which I think County really needs to be careful of in going into the second leg. Because I think the key, fortunately, was that in the second half, that high press burnt them out. They suddenly got tired, and that was when, you know, County were able to switch to our preferred, you know, method of the long ball, just trying to pump it up the other end. And it was, I think Coventry were tiring towards the end of the first half, really, and I think by the time the second half started, they were a little bit slower off the pace, and that enabled Fort to quickly get that goal so early on in the second half. And, you know, the second half was pretty much, you know, you can say, obviously, old cliche here, game of two halves. It very much was, to be fair, because the first half was very strong from Coventry until the end of it, where it looked like they were tiring a bit. And then the second half was kind of the opposite. You know, County were very strong up until the last part of it, where Coventry got that goal, and then suddenly momentum swung back in Coventry's favour right at the end. So I think they are a team that clearly have worked out a couple of ways they can really put pressure on County. And County did ride their luck a few times. You know, that shot you mentioned earlier from McNulty that hit the post, it hit it square on, and fortunately, because it could have very easily bounced, like we see so many times, you know, into the net, it bounced outward, fortunately, back into play, which was fortunate. But it's set up quite well for the second half, I think, for County. There are positives, there are certain things they need to work on ahead of it, but flip side, both playoff ties are at draws at the moment. The Lincoln Exeter game was 0-0. Lincoln looked the stronger of those when I caught the highlights of that this morning. They looked surprisingly much more confident than Exeter. So I'd say at the moment, should County progress, which we all hope they do, it, at the moment, given of yesterday's form, it could be Lincoln they'd be going up against in the playoff final.
Yeah, Lincoln, Notts County, what a prospect that would be at Wembley Stadium for a League 2 playoff final, especially given the atmosphere at Sinsel Bank and Meadow Lane in the league games this season as well. But Jimmy, just to go turn matters back onto the pitch, Dan Jones, what a performance from him, and provided that assist for Jonathan Fort, who scored that back heel as well. He's really, for me, provided an attacking outlet, especially towards the latter half of the season, linking up really well, in particular with George Grant as well on the wing.
Yeah, certainly he's got a lot of good attacking qualities. We saw for the goal, he went in with that challenge with, I think it was Jack Grimmer, the Coventry right back, and he looked like he wanted it more, and he made use of the slippery surface, you could say, because he won that tackle and then put in a really clever, quick cross, which clearly the Coventry defenders didn't have time to set themselves, and Fort was there to provide the finish. And he was a threat throughout the game as well. We saw a chance, I think it was maybe after the goal or before, I can't actually remember, but he just put in a very dangerous, it was sort of a cross shot, and it just went wide, and it was just screaming for someone to get a touch on it and just turn it into the net. And he really has got he's got a good left foot on him, and he can put in a really dangerous ball. And I think, you know, he's going to be key again in the second leg. If he can get time and space on the ball, then you know that he's going to put a good cross in.
Yeah, just a break from our analysis from the game for a moment. We, of course, spoke to Jonathan Stead and Kevin Nolan at this week's press conference prior to the game against Coventry City, the first leg of the playoff semi-final in League 2. Jonathan Stead talked about his contract extension, which was signed in April. The 35-year-old also brushed over the fact that this is his first playoff campaign in his long career.
I'm Alan Hardy, and you're listening to URN Sport.
Well, I think it's keeping calm. I think that's been kind of the message from a lot of people, that obviously when it's like a big derby game or a cup game, you know, the tensions are going to be high. And I think it's about sort of, you know, floating above that, really, and keeping calm heads and making the right decisions at the right times. And the lads that have been involved, we've got quite a few that have been involved in playoffs over the years, young and old. They've all enjoyed them, even when they've been on the losing end. You know, it's a fantastic occasion and one that we're all looking forward to.
Can you enjoy them?
I think you can, yeah. I think you've got to go and enjoy it. obviously it can be disappointing if you don't get the result that you want, but for the majority of the games you need to be enjoying it, because that's what every footballer wants to be playing in these big high profile games, and it's something that we've worked tirelessly since the 1st of July or whenever we were in. It's a long old season, we've worked hard for it, so it'd be nice to get that that icing on the cake.
How different is the mindset given it's over two legs?
It won't be much different, I don't think. I think obviously to go away first, we need to make sure we're solid, and obviously we don't want to give up any advantage to Coventry coming back to our place, because we know we're strong at home. So it might be a bit cagey, a bit scrappy, as you'd expect any League Two game. Maybe a bit more so because of the what's riding on the games. But we'll go and try and play our usual game and be solid and create chances and score goals, which we've managed to do in majority of games we've played this season. We've spoke about this before, yeah. And I came a couple of years ago, nearly 3 years ago now. The picture painting and what I was expecting would be a title challenging season and pushing to bounce back into League One, and what ensued was two difficult seasons. So I still feel like there's unfinished business, and I said that to you when I signed at the beginning of this season and decided to continue here at Notts, is that I want to be in part of something good and moving forward, and the club's been progressing brilliantly on and off the pitch over the last 12 months. So like I said, the icing on the cake will be getting that promotion, because it will be ahead of schedule really, as far as where probably the chairman and everybody wanted the club to be. Yeah, well, my ambitions will stay the same regardless of what happens in the next, two, three games. I've obviously triggered another year. I've played a lot of games, 140 odd, I think, over the last three seasons. So, I've really enjoyed playing lots of football. I think I've marked up 50 appearances for this season. I didn't need to get that many for another year, but it's great to be playing, and I am enjoying my football here. And I said to you, that even the first 2 years, there were still massive parts of it that I enjoyed, even though it was difficult times. I look forward to another season now, and I know my future's settled. I'm not going to be wondering what I'm doing over the summer and wondering if I'm packing up my family anywhere and all that's gone. So, I can really concentrate and knuckle down on next season, whether that's, in League One or another, hopefully another promotion push if we don't make it this time. Yeah.
And Kevin Nolan also gave a review of the campaign for Notts County going into the two playoff legs. Here's what he had to say last Thursday.
Confidence, and it's about just channeling all them and making sure that you keep them all stuck here and using them all to make sure that everything up here is working just fine. I can't plan for nerves, I can't plan for anything else. All I can do is give them the tools what I feel will help them to be the best they can be individually and as a unit and as a team. Just exactly what we've done all season long, and on big occasions they've produced this year, and they've been fantastic. And I'm hoping now we've got two massive occasions coming up, and if we go at them the way we have over the season, then we've got a great opportunity of getting to Wembley, which is going to be another massive occasion, fantastic one for us, and then seeing where that takes us. But I'm delighted with what we've done. I'm delighted with the work, and hopefully now we've got two games to get us to Wembley, and then and hopefully win it to get up.
Some interesting points then from Jonathan Stead and Kevin Nolan there. Interesting that Jonathan Stead has never been involved in a playoff, so I find that baffling, the fact that he's 35 and hasn't been such a lower league veteran, but never been involved in a playoff final. But he seemed confident going into the two games. What do you think the likes of him and Matty Virtue and the key sort of starters in that team are going to be wanted to change going into the next playoff leg on Friday at Meadow Lane?
Well, I think they're certainly going to want to make a statement, I think, probably, because I think that's going to be key. I think it was a cagey match, like we've been touching on the first leg. Obviously, Coventry, like we said, they came out very well at the start. Fortunately, County were able to turn it round, though, later on in the match. I think at home at Meadow Lane, County are going to want to potentially do a bit differently. They're probably going to want to start off pretty strongly on the front foot and really assert themselves very early on, and make them probably hopefully get an early lead, maybe even bag two quite early on, is probably, I suspect, the game plan they might go for, and make Coventry then have to come at them and really sort of bring themselves against them, and hope then that they can County will probably then hope that they can then hit them on the counter attack very quickly and you know, hopefully expose it, because the problem is, a lot of, like we said, county squad, there's obviously the age point, which has been driving the headlines so early. It did quite early on the season. It has been helped by the fact that we have started to bring in young talent, and it has really worked. But the flip side of it is as well, when you look at it, quite a few members of that team, like we said with John Stead, they are old in their experience, they haven't really ever got to this, and you kind of want at this stage them that those players will have hopefully, you know, done it all before. They can be like the calm heads in the dressing room, you know, obviously completely different scale, but talking about, you know, for example, when people say, you know, a team of serial winners, for example, they have that experience, they know what it's like when you get into those cup finals. They're like, right, we've done this before, we know how it goes, just play the game and we'll be fine. You do always wonder if the nerves might be an issue, and I think that's why County really need to make a big statement with the next match against Coventry. I think they'll probably win. I think they will get to the final, hopefully, touch wood. But they, if they are going to win, they need to make it look convincing and confident, so that either Lincoln or Exeter, whoever emerges victorious from that one, will go, right, this is a team we now actually really need to be aware of, we really need to fear. If it's a, you know, a scrappy game, doesn't really look confident for us, and we end up just narrowly scraping through into the final, Lincoln or Exeter, depending on, you know, if one of them puts in a strong performance, they'll go, well, we can take County. You know, they were leading the league for so long, and then they had that, you know, shaky collapse around the FA Cup campaign, obviously around, you know, the whole Swansea issue, you know, all that suddenly brought the team down. Like, well, we know that County are flawed, they aren't, you know, an unstoppable team, they can be broken down, they can be beaten. So it's very much going to come down, I think, to this game. And like I said, keep saying, like, I think a big statement is going to have to be made for not just the fans, obviously, who will want it, but also for the team to give confidence, and also to put a bit of fear into whoever will be playing in the final.
Just based on the previous performances against both Lincoln and Exeter earlier in the season, it was a 2-2 draw at Sinsel Bank back in January for Notts County, and then a 4-1 win as well at home earlier in the season prior to that. And then against Exeter, of course, we had that 3-0 win down in the southwest back in late September, when Notts, of course, got off to that flying start. But then there's a 2-1 win against Notts for Exeter City back in January of this year. So a mixed bag of results, but they'll look at those heavy wins against, you know, Exeter away from home and Lincoln at home as well, and, you know, be feeling encouraged going into whoever they may face in the playoff final. But just going to things more pressing and looking ahead to Friday's game, what do we think, Jimmy? Do you think that Kevin Nolan will vary up his game plan in any way? Of course, we touched on the fact that 38% possession against Coventry City, the fact that they dug in, and that's what a lot of League Two football really is about, being physical and being kind of rough around the edges, if you like. Do you think he'll approach it any differently, being that Notts are at home?
I think as Jeremy was saying before, you know, they want to make a quick start, but at the same time, the main positive, I think, from the performance last night is that they managed to keep, for 86 minutes of the game, managed to keep McNulty and BMU, who scored, I think, maybe 30 goals between them this season, albeit McNulty's got about 23 of them. And they managed to keep them relatively quiet, and I think that's the key, is really keeping those two front men quiet. And then, so if he goes too attacking, then, you know, they might create a bit more space for Coventry, especially, and they might be able to get those through balls into McNulty and BMU. So really, I think Kevin Nolan will be looking to play a very sort of similar sort of style of play, in terms of being maybe quite defensive and then looking for the counter-attack, because if they do go to attacking, then they're going to leave a lot of space in behind for the likes of McNulty, and we know how dangerous he is in front of goal. So I'd be surprised if Kevin Nolan made too many changes, but I think maybe Alessandro might come in, potentially, just to add a bit more attacking threat. Maybe in for Virtue, potentially, but I don't think it'll change too much now.
Now, moving matters over the Trent, we've covered Notts County's playoff push in detail, and we'll bring you all the coverage of that on social media and to our next podcast, as well as we should be down at the game next Friday. Now, just moving things over the Trent to Nottingham Forest, and of course the season over with last week's 3-2 defeat on the final day of the Championship season against Bolton Wanderers. But a big summer ahead, guys. Transfers, of course, top of the agenda for this episode. I think a striker is probably the most pertinent position that Aitor Karanka needs to address in this transfer window. Just looking at some of the targets, Jordan Rhodes is top of the list, Abel Hernandez as well. Who would you be looking to bring in if you were Karanka?
Interestingly, on those two, actually, both of them are... The issue with John Rose, I find at the moment, is that since he left Blackburn, he's really just not quite been at it, really, as a sort of, as the striker he was. He was, you know, Golden Boot winner, I believe, a couple of years back whilst he was at Blackburn, was linked quite heavily with a move then to Premier League sides. Joined Middlesbrough, obviously, with them. Wasn't brilliant at Middlesbrough whilst he was in the Championship. Went up with Middlesbrough then, because I think he left in January to join them. Went up with them into the Premier League, was pretty poor, although that whole Middlesbrough team wasn't great on the offence, to be honest. Came back down, I believe he's now at Sheffield Wednesday, and, you know, hasn't set the world alight then. I think Rhodes is a bit of a gamble to go for, because it's very much going to be seeing, like, if Karanka can get the most out of him. And he has already worked with him, actually, obviously, like I said, at Middlesbrough. Didn't really do very well, so I think I wouldn't go for Rose, even though, obviously, you know, you can say he's a proven goal scorer at this level. I think Abel Hernandez offers something different. He's a bit of a weird one, because he can at times be a very pacey forward, and at times, because he is actually quite a big, tall, strong lad, he can be quite a good target man. He's sort of a bit of an unknown quantity, which makes him a very handy asset to have in the team. And personally, of those two, I would say Abel Hernandez would be probably the one I'd go for. I believe he's still at Hull. So, you know, the situation that they're in, granted, he hasn't been fantastic for Hull either, but he might be one where it might be easier for Forrest, if on a, for transfer budget-wise, to get him out of Hull more easily, considering that the dire straits they're in, he's potentially more likely to want to force a move out of there.
Yeah, in terms of just looking at Hull quickly as well, a player that I think he's maybe not a striker, but I think he's turned a whole season around it. Harry Wilson, I think, on loan from Liverpool. And if I was Isaac Karanka, I'd certainly be looking at getting him on maybe another season-long loan for next season. And I think another player that they're heavily linked with is Marcus Maddison from Peterborough, who's been put on the transfer list as per their transfer policy there. So he won't come cheap, but he's a player that wants to play in the Championship, and, you know, as much as he is a bit of a unlikable character, he scores a lot of goals and he gets a lot of assists at League One, and he's done that consistently for a few years. So I think he would be a good player to bring in for the Championship, and certainly, you know, in terms of creating chances, he would make a lot of assists for any potential striker that could come in.
Yeah, another couple of names banded around, Jack Marriott as well of Peterborough, and Patrick Bamford, interestingly, as well. Of course, he had ties earlier in his career with Nottingham Forest, being a product of the Nigel Doughty Academy. Now, of course, with Borough having gone to Chelsea earlier in his career, of course, that will all depend on whether Borough were to get promoted via the playoffs or not. Of course, currently 1-0 down against Aston Villa in that. But it could be an interesting summer in many ways for Aitor Karanka and Nottingham Forest. Another one that's quite pertinent, a potential permanent outgoing, is, of course, Jason Cummings, who spent much of the season back on loan at Rangers and has scored 6 goals during that loan spell. Jimmy, what did you make of Jason Cummings when he kind of came in? He didn't really make as big an impact, I think, as Forest fans thought he would. It's always quite difficult, isn't it, adjusting for Scottish players going into even the Championship now with that kind of difference in quality.
Yeah, definitely. You know, we see it quite often that these players coming over and they do take a while to adjust. And I think even though he's done it, he's had a decent spell at Rangers, but I think he has spoken about how he wants to stay there now. But I think if I were Karanka, I'd get him back for a pre-season, see if he's changed as a player, and then maybe give him a chance in those pre-season games, see if he has really improved in any way at all, and maybe give it just a gamble on him, because he will score goals. I think it's just giving him a certain amount of time, because he's still quite young. And if he was given a chance in the team, then I think he would score goals. But it does seem as if he is going to stay on for a permanent transfer to Rangers. But we'll have to see what Karanka thinks of him.
Yeah, and in terms of other outgoings, Jeremy, I mean, in a way, I suppose this transfer window for Karanka is his first kind of proper one, really. He made a lot of signings sort of off the cuff and a knee-jerk sort of basis, really, in January. The likes of, you know, he didn't manage to get Michael Dawson, which, of course, might have turned Forrest's fortunes one way or the other completely. I think the key position there to address is of course, centre-back. But nonetheless, looking at this transfer window, you've got the players of previous managers, Mark Warburton, Philippe Montagnier, that they signed, do you think it will almost be quite a big overhaul of the squad over the next couple of months?
Yeah, we saw that. Obviously, when we covered it, transfer deadline day last for January was a very busy one for us, because it was kind of, Karanka obviously was brought in very late into the window. He didn't have a huge amount of time. Obviously, you need as a manager that those time periods to sort of get to know your squad, to get to kind of understand, okay, these are the players that are good, these are the ones that I might need to sort of get someone better in this position. And he did the best he could on deadline day, you know, a bunch of sort of last minute loan signs and free contracts that we were able to get in. Most of them, age-wise, though, were in the upper brackets of, you know, your 29s upwards. And I think now that he's going to have he's had half a season under his belt at Forest, he'll have got to know the squad a lot better. He'll have seen who is buying into his system and who isn't. Centre back, certainly, in my opinion, is an area that doesn't address me. We are very thin there.
Yeah, Kevin Long from Burnley has been a name that's been branded around recently, but
I don't think that's going to happen at the moment, because he's been in tremendous form for Burnley at the moment. I think he got two goals in his first two matches for Burnley when he started. He's been very, very solid, standing in for Ben Mee when he was injured. I honestly, if Forrest were going to go in for him, and bear in mind as well, Burnley now, it looks like they're going to be in the Europa League as well.
Yeah.
I think it, and considering, you know, Tarkowski or Ben Mee could easily be pinched away by another Premier League club, you'd be looking for, you know, with the current transfer market as it is, Burnley could easily demand 30 million for him, and I definitely think that would be probably a figure that they would not be. Well, Jimmy's sort of looking at me a little bit confused. I'm just saying, reading it in terms of, you know, we know how Burnley operate, they're very shrewd in these negotiations. They won't want to kind of let a player go that, when they need the squad depth for what's coming up for them, a very big year, and when they could potentially lose one of their two main starting centre backs, they could demand it. I think as an upper price, I think Forest would probably scoff at that. I think you're more likely to see probably around 15 to 20 million, maybe, but, you know, I'm saying that they could easily play hardball with that. I think you're more likely going to look at probably a championship level centre back. Or potentially someone from one of the relegated clubs, maybe, because quite often, you know, we do say that when a club goes down, that does drop the price value for it. But yeah, sorry, going back to topic. Karanka, he will now have his first full transfer market, first full transfer window. I would expect to see, like you said, Joe, a bit of an overhaul, because it has unfortunately happened in the first time for the last two managers have both been in charge. They have made the first window into quite a bit of an overhaul themselves. Obviously, Warburton bought a load of players last window to try and basically change up the system, switches from basically what was sort of a bit of a 4-3-1 to then playing his, we never could work out what it was at times, could we? It was sort of a 5-2-3 at times. It was very weird to sort of work out his idea of a star, but yeah, I would expect a big overhaul from Karanka this summer, and I'd expect a lot of paper talk to probably, especially with the championship, to probably involve Forrest, are rumoured to be linked with ex-player, probably centre-backs and strikers, though, like we've been saying.
Absolutely. Jimmy, any kind of players looking at that squad that you'd cut if you were Aitor Karanka? I mean, for me, I think Daryl Murphy is not the, you know, sprightly 20-goal a season striker that he was at Ipswich, or indeed in that brief spell at Newcastle United. He's one I would cut. But is there anyone else who you'd definitely have, definitely be showing the door to come the transfer window?
Yeah, I think maybe we could see Michael Mancien leave. Certainly, we talk about overhaul, and Karanka will have to create some funds somewhere. So I think certainly we could see a fair few players leaving. Obviously, Cohen, I think, is retired. Mancien could go as well. And we'll see. I might, maybe even Worrell, because he's a good young centre-back, and I think he has interested, I think, maybe West Brom. And obviously, with them coming down, they were looking for a young centre-back who's proven at championship level. So,
yeah, they could be actually somewhere which, when we're talking about centre-backs, that Forest might go in for. Obviously, a lot of the Premier League teams that are coming down, West Brom, I think, quite a few of the clubs obviously have a lot of release clause contracts, don't they, where sort of if you go into the championship of the club gets relegated, your release clause drops to something around about, most figures I've been hearing are bands around about 15 million. So, you know, if Johnny Evans, for example, I think a lot of other clubs might be going in for him, but if Johnny Evans is one, for example, drops that, I think Forest should be on that very quickly, because him and a couple of the other members of West Brom's team, and we joke on the Saturday Sports Show of how their team is mostly made up of centre-backs aged 30 years old and upwards, But, you know, that's sort of in a way what Forest needs, the stability at the back and also proven players. Granted, they haven't had a good season, but potentially under a man who is renowned as a good, a solid defensive coach, that could really help them get back to sort of the way they were. And they have proven under another solid defensive coach in Tony Pulis year after year that they are solid players. So that might be an area of the market that we could be looking at.
It's a weird one, isn't it? Because you see a lot of championship teams doing very well by the fact that they sign a shedload of players in the January or summer transfer window, and then it almost has not quite an immediate effect, but it takes a couple of months for them to gel, and then they begin to show their full worth. You look at Aston Villa this season, who weren't really cutting it around about September, October, the first half of the season, but now have made the playoffs. You know, you look at these teams and you think Forest could be in that bracket if they had a good transfer window, and if they embed the philosophy and they got everyone kind of singing from the same hymn sheet, if you like. But it just says it hasn't really cut it in recent seasons. I mean, in a way, Jimmy, like, time is the key phrase when we talk about any manager coming to Nottingham Forest, and it's the key term that, you know, no Nottingham Forest manager has really been given in the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, certainly. I think the key is really for Karanka to build a sort of base of the squad and then build around that. You know, so maybe looking at the likes of Lee Tomlin, if they can get him on a permanent, then I would be looking to try and build the team around him. They've brought in Figueiredo, the defender, so he looks like he'll be a mainstay for the next couple of seasons as well. So I think, yeah, just bringing in those additions that can, you know, go around a solid base, and then just give them a couple of seasons to gel. But, you know, they can't be going into any rash decisions. If Karanka starts off poorly, then you've got to give him time to make sure that the players start to work, you know, together as a team, and they begin to gel more. Because, you know, as you say, it has taken these teams a couple of seasons sometimes when they do have an overhaul for them to really start playing well. So, yeah, I think time is key, because if Karanka isn't given too much time, then he might be sacked, and then you're looking at another overhaul, and they're just going into an endless circle, a cycle. So, yeah, I think time is what Karanka needs, and I think if he's given it, then he'll do well, and we'll start to see Forest push for the playoffs and promotion in a couple of years, I think.
Thank you very much, Jimmy and Jeremy, for joining me on this week's episode of Over the Trent. Do check out our Twitter account at Over the Trent Pod for all the latest on Notts' playoff campaign, as well as updates from the press conferences and the latest analysis and features as well. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll be back very, very soon with all the latest from Notts' second playoff semi-final leg against Coventry City from Meadow Lane. We'll be bringing you commentary highlights from that, as well as all the reaction post and pre-match from Kevin Nolan and the players as well. Thank you very much for listening, and we hope you join us again soon.